Now,
from the 105.9 WMAL WynnBET Studios,
the Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. News Talk 105.9 WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for being with us. And we have got plenty to cover this morning. We'll be joined by KT McFarland, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. Cheryl Atkinson will be with us. John Gizzi, of course, Jennifer Harper from the Washington Times. And we'll also be talking with Jim Trusty, our legal expert. But we're going to start things off this morning with something very close to home. And we hope it's not too close to home. And that is the winter weather forecast. And we are joined by Veronica Johnson from the Storm Watch 7 Weather Center. Veronica, thanks for being with us.
Oh, you are quite welcome. I know a lot of folks kind of eager to maybe venture out this morning and kind of see how we fared from last evening's storm. Our temperatures were just high enough. We had a lot of melting, so most of the roads are okay. But this is where I tell folks, don't be fooled. You know, there is still going to be some icy patches out there, even on some of the main roads on the side. So rather deceptive, please watch your speed all weekend long, because we are not going to get above freezing. I've got a high temperature tomorrow in D.C. of 33, but everywhere else pretty much below freezing, cold and icy. And listen, if you are traveling east, we still have some winter weather advisories, even warnings that are still up. Baltimore, Annapolis, down toward St. Mary's, Calvert County, until 9 a.m. this morning, winter weather advisory and a winter storm warning just over the Bay Bridge, with a blizzard warning for Ocean City. I've been sitting here looking at, Rick, the cameras, the live cameras, Rehoboth, as well as Ocean City, and it looks like a whole nother world from what we're seeing out our window here. They've got blowing and drifting snow. They've picked up already. I talked to a friend early this morning. He said he recorded about 5-6 inches of snowfall, and they could get another 3 easily. The visibility down under a half mile, it's just ugly out there. And for us, even here locally, even though our snow has been done for a while, it's going to be an icy cold day. Wind chills, teens, and probably dropping below zero north and west of D.C. by early Sunday morning. Good thing is, for folks who do want to get out, your Sunday afternoon is going to be better. We'll have sunshine and less wind. And how about being close to 60 degrees next Thursday?
Well, that's better news for us here in the Washington area. But I want to ask you one thing. I've got a report here from the BBC, and it's talking about the nor'easter. The mayor of Boston says that they could get up to 2 feet of snow in New England, and experts say the storm will undergo bombogenesis, and they say the colder air. What is bombogenesis?
So I've got some terms for you, right? Everybody knows blizzard, that's when you've got the high winds that last for 3 hours or more. Nor'easter, you got the winds blowing into the storm out of the northeast. What a bomb cyclone is an intense storm, right, with the northeasterly winds and the rapid pressure drops, rapid intensification of the storm system. So technically, we as meteorologists and scientists, we say, okay, it's got to have a pressure drop of 24 millibars in 24 hours, which really is substantial when it comes to an area of low pressure. That's just really rapid deepening of the storm system, what you don't typically see with even most winter storms. So to have that, it is significant, and for the areas of New England, that's exactly what I'm seeing on my model data, whether it's the American model or the European model. Everybody's heard of us talk about the data now. It is showing anywhere between 13 and just around 20 inches of snowfall for Boston. And if you know anyone, or if you've ever lived up there, you can travel a few miles and go from sometimes a little bit of nothing in one area to a whole lot of shoveling in another. So they really are going to be taking the brunt of the storm system. That is the sweet spot for the storm system. But even now, I'm seeing Long Island, areas around the Jersey Shore, really taking a beating this morning. I mean, it's just ugly there.
Great information from Veronica Johnson and the Storm Watch 7 Weather Center. Thank you, Veronica.
Thank you.
6:13, it is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. All eyes have been, of course, on Ukraine this past week. General Mark Milley and the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, holding a joint press conference yesterday at the Pentagon. General Milley warning it's possible that Russia could invade Ukraine with, quote, little warning, and an attack would result in significant civilian casualties. The general also said Russian troop levels are at levels not seen since the Cold War. Ukrainian President Zelensky is accusing the U.S. and NATO of creating panic that's harming Ukraine's economy. Well, he spoke with President Biden this week, and we'll get into that in just a moment. But I want to bring you a little bit from that press conference at the Pentagon yesterday. We'll lead off with Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, and then we'll have comments from General Milley. And it's a bit of a long clip, but it is the full explanation of where we are in terms of U.S. troops and Ukraine. And that was the question about the U.S. troops going to that area.
You know, I think you can assume that any time that we think about troop movements, we always consider the impact that that's going to have on leaders' minds and their decision making. I just make two points, and you raised this earlier. We haven't actually moved any troops. We put troops on higher alert. And the second point that I would make, Lita, is that even if and when we do move troops, the purpose of those troops deploying would be to reassure allies or directly in support of NATO or both. So I think that, again, before we make any decisions on readiness or movement of troops, we always take those things into mind, what other leaders, the impact on other leaders.
Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I just echo what the Secretary said. We haven't deployed anybody. We haven't moved anybody yet. We're just increasing our readiness levels. And I think in terms of your question about provocation with respect to Russia, that would depend on the size, scale, scope, and type of forces that were deployed as to whether or not that was provocative to Russia. We certainly have no intent whatsoever that I'm aware of. Of putting offensive forces to attack Russia, and I don't think that's NATO's intent at all.
So those are the words of General Mark Milley and our Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin. Now, I mentioned in the phone call between President Biden and President Zelensky of Ukraine, and of course the spin from the White House and from President Zelensky is that the call went very well, they had a very substantive conversation, etc. However, there is a report out there that things didn't quite go so well, and the White House readout, not mentioning it. The report here is from CNN's Jake Tapper, and here's what they say at CNN.
We have breaking news for you in our world lead. A senior Ukrainian official tells CNN that today's phone call between President Biden and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, quote, did not go well. Our source tells CNN that the two disagreed about the immediacy of the threat of a Russian attack on Ukraine. The White House and Pentagon have been emphatic that they believe an attack could be imminent. We should note the White House just released its own readout of that call, and there was no mention of President Biden's warnings or the two presidents' disagreements.
Well, the content doesn't surprise me. Of course, you don't expect that the White House is going to give you the full scoop. But to hear the report from CNN, I found that fascinating. Well, that wasn't the only report on CNN about it. Here's CNN's Matthew Chance.
Telling his Ukrainian counterpart that an invasion was virtually certain later on in February when the ground becomes more frozen in this country. He went on to say that he warned the Ukrainian leader that the capital, Kiev, this city here, could be sacked. And that's the word he apparently used, according to this Ukrainian official, sacked by Russian forces, who he said may attempt to occupy it.
Okay, so you have the White House version, and then you have the CNN version. You can believe the one you want. It is 6:18. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL, and Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
Overall, a light volume of traffic on the major interstates, but you will encounter some wet roadways and some possible icy conditions, especially on bridges, ramps, and overpasses. So use extra caution, and also use extra caution on the secondary roadways and watch for windy conditions. Full wind restrictions are in effect on the Bay Bridge this morning. In Temple Hills, Branch Avenue is still closed in both directions between Iverson Street and Colebrook Road, and that due to fallen power cables in the roadway. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Snow has been done for a while here, and there are some icy patches out there, so watch that this morning. And really, it's going to be an icy cold day for sure as winds increase, gusts around 35 miles per hour, about the midday time period. We'll have a high temperature of 27 degrees, and wind chills most of the day will be in the teens and even single digits, dropping below zero by early tomorrow morning. But a better day tomorrow with sunshine, the high 33. Your next weather maker, Thursday of next week, with rain. I'm 7 News meteorologist Veronica Johnson in the Storm 7 Weather Center.
22 degrees in the nation's capital, 619 on this Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler, and I want to get into a story that you may have heard about. Chris Plant was talking about it. It's originated out of the Fox News Channel. And I wanted to bring it up because, unless you caught it on the Fox News Channel or you were listening to Chris Plant yesterday, you probably won't hear it anywhere else. And I know that there are people on Capitol Hill that have a chance to listen on the weekend. Maybe they don't get the chance to listen during the week when they're working. So I think it's a pretty big deal. And it originates from some body cam footage that was shot at Westchester, New York's airport in August. In the body cam footage, you can see pilots of a charter aircraft. It's an aircraft that had flown illegal immigrants into Westchester, New York, in the middle of the night. So the body cam footage goes to kind of explain what's going on there, and here's what some of the aircraft crew had to say.
You don't want to be somewhere where the spotlight is hit. Low as possible. A lot of this is just...
No, I get it. I just, like I said...
stuff that we don't tell people. Because what we don't want to do is attract attention. We don't want the media.
Yeah.
Like, we don't even know where we're going when they tell us.
We don't want to attract the media. We want to avoid the spotlight. And we don't even know where we're going till we take off. That's what's going on in the middle of the night. The White House is denying it, but there's a little more of that body cam footage available to us.
I get the whole secrecy and all this, but this is even about my secret.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
And why? You know why?
You know why.
Yeah, I know, but why? Yeah.
Come on.
No, but what's the big secret? Everybody knows it's happening.
You know why? Because if you get out, the government's betraying
you. Ooh, well, some pretty serious conversation there. And Bill Malusian is a Fox News Channel reporter, and he's been all over the story on the border for months. He had some comments about ICE, and this is an interesting conversation from Bill Malusian at the Fox News Channel.
An ICE source tells me these discrete mass releases have been happening since last year, and that source also told me that ICE is releasing illegal immigrants who have criminal records for misdemeanors. Some of those misdemeanors include assault, drunk driving, illegal reentry, and drug possession. I reached out to ICE this morning to ask if that's true. They did not deny it. They only told me they released these migrants on a case-by-case basis. That ICE source went on to tell me they feel the agency has been turned into a travel booking agency rather than an immigration enforcement agency.
And again, the reason I wanted to get into this a little bit is because if folks are tuned in that are in offices at Capitol Hill during the week and can do something about this, it might be very helpful to us. Now, the governor of Texas is Greg Abbott, and he convened a meeting of a number of attorneys general from the Southwest yesterday. It was a very emotional meeting that they had, and here's Greg Abbott.
It is astonishing that one lawbreaker that we are having to wage legal action against is the President of the United States. There are laws passed by the United States Congress that the President is not enforcing. There are United States constitutional provisions that the President is not upholding. Somebody has to hold the President accountable for his abandonment of the rule of law in this country.
And the governor went on.
Every single one of your states, the residents of your states, are facing consequences, sometimes deadly consequences, because of Biden's open border policies.
And this was another comment from the governor of Texas. And I think this is very important because people don't necessarily realize that this is going on. The fentanyl that is being trafficked around this country, the deaths from fentanyl that are caused. And this is Governor Abbott on that topic.
They have seized enough fentanyl to kill every man, woman, and child in all of the states together here combined. That is how deadly this is. Doses to kill more than 222 million Americans are sweeping our states for one reason only. Joe Biden does not care that fentanyl is invading our states.
Now, the Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, has assured us now for a year that the border's closed, that they're enforcing all the laws. Well, he went to the border on Wednesday, had a meeting with some of the law enforcement at the border, and one of the members of law enforcement turned his back on the Secretary of Homeland Security, and this was the Secretary's response, and if you listen carefully, you will hear the response back from that law enforcement agent.
Let me just say, you can turn your back on me, but I'll never turn my back on you.
You did the day you were appointed.
Ooh, you did the day you were appointed. Ooh, pretty tough language there. Well, the vice president was in Honduras this week. Of course, she's getting to the root of the cause, which is in Honduras, of course, not the border enforcement policies thousands of miles north. But no, here's what Vice President Harris said. Now, she's been working on this for how long? I mean, she's the czar, right? See if you can make any sense whatsoever out of her answer here. Now, keep in mind, she is the vice president of the United States who has been working on this task for a year now.
He has always been clear, and we have been clear. The work we need to do is going to be work that will manifest over a long period of time. Hopefully not too long, but certainly not overnight. The problems that we need to address are problems that did not occur overnight, and the solutions, if they're going to have any impact, will not occur overnight.
Was that 20 seconds of double talk, or am I missing something there? Well, certainly the solutions are not going to happen overnight with this administration. They were happening under the previous administration. It is 6:27. It is the Saturday morning update. News Talk 105.9 WMAL. In the news at 6:30, parts of 10 eastern U.S. states are under blizzard warnings. The powerful storm could dump as much as 2 feet of snow on Boston. It's churning up the East Coast. As we heard from Veronica Johnson a few minutes ago, we seem to have dodged the bullet here in D.C., but not far away down on the eastern shore. There is snow at this hour. Shoppers have cleared grocery shelves and raided snowblower dealers on Friday in the Northeast ahead of the storm. The snow could fall as fast as 5 inches per hour in some areas of the Northeast and New England. They're expecting wind gusts in New England up to 70 miles an hour. New York and Philadelphia also in the storm's path. Airlines have canceled thousands of flights in advance. Some New England officials fretting about a shortage of snowplow drivers. Intense cold expected to follow the storm. The highly contagious Omicron variant of the coronavirus is driving the daily American death toll higher than during last fall's Delta wave. Deaths are likely to keep rising for days or even weeks. The 7-day rolling average for daily new COVID-19 deaths in the U.S. has been climbing since mid-November. It reached 2,267 on Thursday. That surpasses a September peak of 2,100. When Delta was the dominant variant. Andrew Neumeier is a public health professor at the University of California, Irvine. He says Omicron will push the U.S. over 1 million deaths. It's now 6:32. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
No delays or incidents reported on major interstates this morning. Authorities still clearing away the snow. And due to the cold temperatures and windy conditions, you'll need to use extra caution if you plan to head out. And also watch out for potentially icy conditions on certain roadways, especially the bridges, ramps, and overpasses. So be extra careful this morning. In Temple Hills, you will still find that Branch Avenue is closed between Iverson Street and Colebrook Drive, and that due to the fallen power cables in the roadway. On westbound 66 between the Fairfax County Parkway and Route 28 in Centerville, that portion of the roadway closed till about 7 o'clock this morning for overnight road work, so follow the posted detours. Now from GarageJoyRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Snow has been done for a while here, and there are some icy patches out there, so watch that this morning. And really, it's going to be an icy cold day for sure as winds increase, gusts around 35 miles per hour, about the midday time period. We'll have a high temperature of 27 degrees, and wind chills most of the day will be in the teens and even single digits, dropping below zero by early tomorrow morning. But a better day tomorrow with sunshine, the high 33. Your next weather maker, Thursday of next week, with rain. I'm 7 News meteorologist Veronica Johnson in the Storm at 7 Weather Center.
22 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:34 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It's the Saturday morning update on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Jennifer Harper joins us every Saturday morning. She writes inside the Beltway at the Washington Times, keeps tabs on all of the polls, what people are thinking around the country, tabs on the politicians and the campaigns. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Rick.
Speaking of campaigns, it's a busy day for the former president, Donald Trump.
Yes, it is. It's a very big and busy day for Donald Trump. He's a busy guy, but this is particularly busy for him. He has two jumbo events that are scheduled for today, and they are both in Texas. And let's just look at really quickly. He's going to appear at an American Freedom Tour event in Houston, and it's getting ready to start. It's 8:15 a.m. their time, and their whole aim is to promote a conservative agenda, they say, and protect America's future. So on stage with Mr. Trump is Jeanine Perot from Fox News, Donald Trump Jr., Dinesh D'Souza, the author, and former White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany, so she will be there as well. And then he is going to Conroe. This is a city of about 85,000. It's about 40 miles north of Houston. And that will be one of Mr. Trump's signature Save America events with all the trimmings. And this is how they're planning for that. But the event does not start till like 7 p.m., but the public parking areas open at 6 a.m. in the morning. That's 11 hours ahead of time. And the local officials have approved $100,000 in overtime for their local law enforcement. They expect, quote, massive crowds. That's according to the Houston Chronicle. And to quote a local sheriff, this is Montgomery County Sheriff Rand Henderson, and this is what he had to say to the Houston Chronicle. He said he was thinking back to 2016 when Mr. Trump had campaigned there. He said he was just a candidate then. This event is expected to be five times larger than that. It's going to be significant, and we are looking forward to the event. So that's coming from a local sheriff. And just to name a couple of the folks that are also on stage, that would be Texas Governor Greg Abbott and his Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, Ken Paxton, Attorney General, and on down the line, our Agriculture Commissioner. They're all out there. And also Matt Rinaldi, he is the chairman of the Republican Party of Texas. So a big time down there in Texas all for today.
One of your stories, headline on it, Stern Advice for Lazy Republican Leaders as the Midterm Elections Near. And that's not stern advice from Howard Stern either, is it?
No, it's not, Rick. In fact, this is coming from a senior columnist at The Federalist. And it's pretty good advice because, you know, we know that the Republican Party is now kind of enjoying some uncommon popularity, but it's going to take a lot more than that when the midterms roll around. That's about 10 months away. When the elections finally, the polls open for the elections, that's not a lot of time in the political world, as you know. And so some advice to the GOP. Do something significant, right the wrongs, help working class voters, and better the condition of the nation. This is coming from Rachel Bovard. She's a senior columnist for the Federalist, and this is what she writes. Republicans cannot simply rally voters with a promise not to make it worse. Republicans cannot, in other words, do what they have largely done with a Senate majority. Set it on a shelf, polish it, and admire it from afar while checking off a beltway-driven agenda designed solely to protect incumbents. And she goes on to say, rather, a majority must be used not only for the purpose of giving new GOP voters a reason to stay, although that is a benefit, but because it's the right and urgently necessary thing to do. She goes on to say, if Senate Republicans cannot find it in them to stand up for their voters now, when the stakes are so perilous and the moment so fraught, then what are they good for? I love that. Anyway, that's coming from Rachel Bovard, senior columnist for the Federalist.
Well, we've seen the debate over masks. We got Omicron variants. We got booster shots. What is Gallup telling us about how people are feeling these days?
Yeah, well, if you're sick of feeling crummy, Gallup is confirming that a lot of people feel really crummy right now. And so they're saying in a new poll that optimism about the trajectory of the pandemic in the U.S. has fallen sharply, and worry about contracting the virus has risen to its highest level in a year. So part of that might be from all the TV coverage that's so hysterical or repetitive or whatever, and lots more. You can't dismiss it. But anyway, let's go into some of these numbers here. Only 20% of Americans currently say the pandemic is improving. 22% think it's staying the same, and 58% now believe it's worsening. 72% of Americans, Rick, have worn a face mask when outside of their homes in the past week. There's a pretty big partisan divide there, Gallup has found. That includes 94% of Dems who are still out there, Democrats wearing their masks, as opposed to 48% of the Republicans. And we'll go down the line really quickly. Lots of numbers early this morning, but they're significant. 58% of Americans say they have avoided large crowds in the past week. 46% have avoided traveling by plane, bus, subway, or train in the past 7 days. 41% have avoided public places in the past week. 34% have avoided small gatherings. Anyway, this is a Gallup poll of 1,569 U.S. adults conducted January 3 through 14 and released this week. So if you're feeling jittery still, you're not alone.
Well, I've heard a lot of talk about Hunter Biden and his ties to China and business arrangements he's had with Chinese companies, but he's not the only one, apparently.
Well, absolutely not. And there is a new book out this week, which is all about that whole situation. And this book has currently been number one on Amazon and Barnes & Noble for the last 4 days. If you're curious, this is Peter Schweitzer's book, and the title kind of tells all. Here is the title, Red-Handed, How American Elites Get Rich Helping China Win. Again, this is from Peter Schweitzer. And he's the author of a number of significant books, but his publisher says that this is the scariest investigation he has ever conducted. Anyway, it's got a bright red cover, and on this bright red cover is President Biden, and he is shaking hands with China's president. And according to the publisher, in advance notes, they say that the Chinese government seeks to infiltrate American institutions is hardly surprising. What is wholly new, however, are the number of American elites who are eager to help the Chinese dictatorship in its quest for global rule. Presidential families, Silicon Valley gurus, Wall Street high rollers, Ivy League universities, even professional athletes, all willing to sacrifice American strength and security on the altar of personal enrichment. Again, this is Peter Schweitzer's new book just out this week called The Scariest Investigation He's Done. The name of the book, once again, Red-Handed, How American Elites Get Rich Helping China Win, by Peter Schweitzer.
He's written some very interesting books in the past that have irritated a number of people all the way up to the Clintons.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And we can just list them right here, and everyone will know what we're talking about. Mr. Schweitzer is also the author of Clinton Cash, Extortion, Throw Them All Out, and Architects of Ruin. So there you go.
You know, you often do armchair travel in the column. And this time of the year, I think the only way I'd want to travel to this destination is in an armchair rather than being outside in a very heavy coat. But what do you have for us?
Well, it's kind of just a diversion for today. And unbeknownst to probably a lot of people, the National Trust for Historic Preservation, a very interesting group that looks after old buildings and old libraries and gardens and all sorts of things, they have a tour department called National Trust Tours. And they have a most unusual trip. You can pick from a lot of them, but here's just one of them we'll look at this morning. This is Cruise All Five Great Lakes by a Five-Star Small Ship. This is true. You can go on all of the five lakes in a luxury ship, and this is a new outreach. And they advise that the emphasis on this tour is maritime history, unspoiled beauty, North American innovation, and historic charm. And some of the stops on this boat include Milwaukee, Mackinac Island, Sault Ste. Marie, Tobermory, Detroit, Niagara Falls, and Toronto are among these stops. And the ship in question is the 430-foot Dumont d'Urville. I believe it's a French ship, and they have 92 deluxe cabins, and they represent a new generation of unprecedented design, technology, and standards in comfort and elegance, and caters to the most discerning passengers. And this is a little later in the year, but if you're curious about this and all the other interesting tours they have, just go to nationaltrusttours.com and find out. It's good armchair travel for today.
Jennifer Harper, inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Always a pleasure. You can follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Rick. Have a good day, everybody.
It is 6:46 on the Saturday morning update. News Talk 105.9 WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Jim Trusty, and he will give us the rundown on the Supreme Court nominations. We're going to be talking with Jim about that. John Gizzi will join us, and we're going to talk with John, of course, about President Biden, his conversation with President Zelensky, and we've got Cheryl Atkinson coming up. She's got a very interesting topic she's going to talk about tomorrow. We'll get into it this morning, and that is the whole question of reparations. Interesting, and that's coming up with Cheryl Atkinson in the 7 o'clock hour. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer will join us. We'll talk a lot about the Ukraine situation as it resolves, you know, really turning to the military aspects of what we could anticipate. You know, there's talk about how much a factor the weather is, possibilities of the U.S. troops going in to that region, and we'll talk with Tony more about that this morning. And then KT McFarland will join us, and she always has an overview of kind of where we are in foreign policy and of course, her expertise on Russia and what to expect from Vladimir Putin. That's all coming up in the 7 o'clock hour here on the Saturday morning update. But first off, we've got Michelle Murray in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
Traffic is moving without delay on the Beltway through Tyson's heading in towards Bethesda and College Park, and no delays continuing towards the Wilson Bridge. You will find that there are limited wind restrictions in effect on the Chesapeake Bay Bridge, so use extra caution there, and in general use extra caution with some potentially icy conditions on bridges, overpasses, and on and off ramps, but the main roads on the highways look clear so far with no delays. There is a report of an accident on Route 28 in Virginia, right in the vicinity of Notes Boulevard, so use caution there. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Snow has been done for a while here, and there are some icy patches out there, so watch that this morning. And really, it's going to be an icy cold day for sure, as winds increase, gusts around 35 miles per hour, about the midday time period. We'll have a high temperature of 27 degrees, and wind chills most of the day will be in the teens and even single digits, dropping below zero by early tomorrow morning. But a better day tomorrow with sunshine, the high 33. Your next weather maker, Thursday of next week, with rain. I'm 7 News meteorologist Veronica Johnson in the Storm 7 Weather Center.
22 degrees in the nation's capital, 649. News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Know the news the minute you wake up. O'Connor and Company with Larry O'Connor. 5 to 9 a.m. on WMAL.
It's the Saturday morning update on News Radio 105.9 WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Jim Trusty joins us every week. He is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, the former chief of the Organized Crime and Gang Section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, always a pleasure to have you with us.
Good morning.
Major announcement regarding the Supreme Court this week, as Justice Breyer has now announced he is stepping down after a lot of pressure from progressives. President Biden has said that he will nominate an African-American woman to fill the position. A name that is being talked about a lot around Washington is Ketanji Brown Jackson. And you've actually appeared before Judge Jackson.
Yeah, I have a little bit. She was, until fairly recently, was a U.S. District Court judge in Washington, D.C. Last year, I think in about the middle of the year, she was elevated to the Court of Appeals in D.C. She's got a very good academic background. She's a double Harvard graduate, law school and undergrad. We'll try not to hold that against her. She clerked for Justice Breyer, and that's always kind of a cute kind of transitional moment when you have a Supreme Court justice retiring and one of his former clerks is in the running. I will say that in terms of her overall experience, it's limited for appellate experience. And you and I talked about this with Amy Coney Barrett, Rick, back in the day, that I said I wasn't really thrilled with her only having about 3 years on the circuit, although she certainly had a lengthy academic career, pursuing constitutional law interests. But Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson has only got about a year of appellate experience. But I will say this, my direct contact with her, she was very prepared, very serious, clearly very smart. So, she's not somebody who I shudder to think of as rising up to the Supreme Court. Doesn't guarantee that we'll like her opinions or anything, but she seemed like a pretty hardworking, intelligent judge when I saw her.
Well, you, as a former prosecutor and now practicing attorney in Washington, tell us why that appellate experience is important to you.
Well, look, and I don't want to shortchange trial experience. I like having judges that rise through the ranks that are used to actually presiding over trials like she has. But appellate experience means you really start delving into the hardcore legal issues and procedural issues that dog our cases as they go up the chain from trial through the appellate court. So it's a little bit more academic. You're not having witnesses appear live in front of you. You're reviewing transcripts and assessing some of the legal issues. And you also get a chance to kind of flesh out what their judicial philosophies are when they write these opinions about tricky issues that come before them as appellate judges. So we don't get the benefit of a big, long track record for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson like we might for some other candidates. But again, that's the wave of the future when it comes to Supreme Court nominations. They're trending younger, and they're trending to have a little less overall experience because of that.
A story that not too many people are following, but I think a lot of us are interested in, is the John Durham probe. Of course, it was renewed by the Department of Justice. Developments this week, Jim, what's going on?
So the John Durham investigation seems to be looking at several different areas of potential misconduct. One of them resulted in an indictment for an attorney named Michael Sussman not too long ago, and we've talked about that some. And in the Sussman case, which is heading towards trial, John Durham recently filed a motion, actually this week, filed a motion that was fairly routine in terms of just telling the court the status of discovery, of the materials that Durham has to turn over to Sussman's lawyers. But in between the lines, or actually pretty explicitly at some places, there's some really incendiary components to what's going on in John Durham's probe. And it's not about Durham's conduct. It's about the Inspector General, Michael Horowitz. So Durham has been taking an expansive view of what he has to turn over to Michael Sussman's lawyers prior to this trial. And he wrote a motion this week that essentially told the judge, I've turned over tens of thousands of documents, but I've got a few loose ends. I need a little bit more time. That's not particularly controversial. That's actually pretty common. But what we found out from looking at this motion is that Durham is running into a roadblock in the name of Michael Horowitz, the Inspector General for the Department of Justice. So it's extraordinary to see that Durham is putting into this pleading the fact that the Inspector General has not been honest with him about what documents and materials the Inspector General possessed. So here's what it gets down to. I'll try to keep this relatively high level. There was apparently a situation where Sussman in 2017, while still a lawyer connected to the Hillary Rodham Clinton campaign, met with the Inspector General about this very strange issue to do with computer security on the Inspector General's staff. He went in, he talked to the Inspector General, this generated reports But when John Durham met with the inspector general and asked for all the materials he might have that are relevant, the inspector general didn't acknowledge that conversation and didn't give him anything. Further, the inspector general didn't give the cell phones of the FBI general counsel who had taken the false statements alleged from Mr. Sussman and forensic reports related to that. So all of this to say that the inspector general, the watchdog for integrity for the Department of Justice, intentionally, it appears, held back on providing important information and material to John Durham and his probe. I mean, this is a bizarro world, Rick, where we literally need a watchdog to look at the watchdog.
So, Jim, if you had to speculate, I mean, what does this mean?
Well, as to the conduct of the inspector general, at the very best, most euphemistically, you could say this is extreme negligence. It doesn't read that way in this motion. It reads like the inspector general is being dishonest with John Durham. And I guess that means to lowball or to somehow suppress some of the avenues that Durham has been looking at for potential indictment. And, you know, I take it to mean one fundamental thing for John Durham's independent probe. It's welcome to the swamp where even the inspector general will sabotage you.
Is it possible that the inspector general is getting pressure from somewhere else higher up?
Yeah, really hard to know. That's a great question. And, you know, they're supposed to be independent of that. The inspector general is supposed to be their own boss, even at the expense of an attorney general or someone higher up in the executive branch talking to them. But from this motion, at least, and maybe we'll see some resolution of it that plays out publicly, this motion is damning in terms of the integrity and the work ethic that might be connected to this particular inspector general.
Jim, it's been another week of tragic shootings of police officers around the country, including two officers who died in New York City. You know, you just want to step back and say to all those members of law enforcement that might be listening that, you know, we're with you on this. You don't get the support in the media that typically you deserve. It's just horrific as to what's going on around the country.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that, Rick. I mean, we've got this bizarre culture right now where apparently it's okay to fight or resist or shoot or disparage or defund police. I mean, I don't know what the cause of this is, and I suppose nobody's going to be able to identify every factor that pulls together to create these tragedies. I just know that I spent some time online looking at the funeral procession for that 22-year-old officer, Jason Rivera, and to watch that sea of uniforms paying respect to a young man who was truly a public servant, a guy who just wanted to make things safe for his community. And it hurts to see it. I mean, it's beautiful on some level, but it's so sorrowful to see that type of funeral procession for such a young man with a wife. You know, I guess the thing I would say is if you see a police officer this weekend, maybe it's time to buy their cup of coffee for them or just give them a quiet thank you. These guys are under siege across the country, and they feel it probably more than any of us when they see these horrific shooting videos and these terrible, sad videos of funerals that take place soon after.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. You can follow Jim on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer. Thank you so much, Jim.
Thank you, Rick.
We're at 6:58. We've got the 7 o'clock news coming up with Heather Curtis. Then we're back with John Gizzi. We've got Cheryl Atkinson on the way, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and K.T. McFarland. Stay with us on the Saturday Morning Update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL-FM.